Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figus Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. As I just rammed my face into the microphone, Smurf here. Evidently all the manual dexterity of a potted plant this morning. How is it going? Welcome back. We took last week off. It was Christmas. There wasn't a whole lot going on. Just a lot of like last minute stuff to do. And, you know, it was a thing. Family and stuff. So hopefully you had a good holiday. And if you're still out there looking for deals and stuff to pick up before the year's end, consider our sponsor, Suzy Q's, who is the creator of some brilliant jewelry, some skilled craftsmanship that goes into her creative arts and one-of-a-kind items that nobody else is going to have and everyone is going to ask, where did you get that? I want that. And there's, you know, there's a little sense of pride and kind of feeling like, yeah, I got something you want. You can't get it because I'm not going to tell you where. And you're not going to find it just, you know, any run-of-the-mill five and dime. And for those that don't know what a five and dime is, Google it. What else? So we took the week off. I really wasn't going to do a podcast this week either. Because there's not a whole lot going on, but I figured, you know, we'll close out the year because this is the last podcast of the year of 2020 as we put this one in the books, thank God. We'll see how 2021 goes. We're hopeful, fingers crossed, toes crossed, everything you can think is crossed, just in case. But there's a few things to talk about. Some speculations, of course. The big thing, of course, is Wonder Woman hitting the direct release, and I haven't watched it yet. Too much going on to sit down and, you know, flip over to HBO Go and get into it. But of course, I've been inundated with messages and my opinions on the film, and I know. Sorry. I'm not there yet. I'm getting there. Playing catch up on a few other things. But reading and hearing initial feedback from people, I don't know if people liked this film very much. And in fact, I'm almost going to have to say that I'm happy Green Lantern isn't the worst DC film now. Just personally. But that doesn't mean that it is a bad film. I don't know. And to be honest with you, the reviews are so mixed that I don't know what to think from just a spectator standpoint. I have no idea from just the initial reactions, and it could be one of those things because there was, I think originally, was it Superman, Man of Steel, Cavill's Superman, that I had an initial problem with, and it wasn't until I came back and watch the film again, and I'm just like, well, you know what, this isn't as bad as I had thought. So maybe that'll be the case with Wonder Woman, as people, you know, let this kind of gestate, let it simmer a little bit, and just kind of, you know, see how it goes. It's so hard to say if it's good, if it's bad, if it's not. I know one of the biggest complaints is that, of course, it's Wonder Woman 84, but they really don't take a whole lot of it being in 1984 to the film. You can't really tell. It's just, you know, nothing like any of the quirks or, you know, what was going on at the times. Similar, you know, where, you know, Captain Marvel, when they did that, they really did focus in on, you know, the time period and when Captain Marvel, you know, crashed into Earth. So it seems like a miss on that point. And the story I hear is a little light, anemic, kind of meh. There's a few head-scratching moments, and And that could be the case. Again, I haven't watched it, so I'm merely relaying what the spectators have told me. And other people are absolutely in love with it and think it's great. Regardless of what the fans may think, Warner Brothers actually already announced, I think it was like day three, that the Wonder Woman sequel has already been in the works. It's a ready, greenlit, go type of situation. So we're getting Wonder Woman 3. Patty Jenkins, of course, is coming back to direct the third installment. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I know one person who I kind of value their opinion when it comes to films was telling me that Patty Jenkins really didn't direct as compelling a film as she did with the first installment, and that there were a few misses that they thought were you know, her being influenced by other directors, or she had seen something and didn't execute it to the best of her ability, or, you know, it's something that just, it looks like it was going to go one way in the film and it didn't. So I'm waiting to watch it to see exactly what they're referring to, because they said it's actually very apparent, at least it was to them. So I'm very intrigued by that whole prospect of just, okay, what was Patty Jenkins trying to do? And I know Patty is kind of, I wouldn't say new to the directing field, but she's also getting, I saw a quote that she's annoyed being referred to as a woman director, or that's the label she's got. And okay, well, you know, female director, yeah, that's what you are. So I don't know how that would be upsetting. I don't think it's being meant in a derogatory, but it is being overplayed. I mean, she's a director. Just leave it at that. So I can understand it. Everyone's like focused in on that, and I, you know, nobody likes labels, but I just think it's very, very curious. Nothing as far as what the plot for the third installment is going to be. I guess that there is a cliffhanger or something that's put out there to indicate a sequel that would be easy to transition into, which is fine. I don't know where you go from Wonder Woman 84. Do you springboard forward to after Justice League? Do you put in another filler? It's really, I don't know. That's kind of the gray area. Because when you're dealing with Wonder Woman, there's some fabulous villains that she has, but for the most part, because when you think about her villains, I mean, we opened up with Ares, of course, as the big bad for the first one. Cheetah, which is another pretty solid staple for, like, going back to classics, like, you know, the old superhero or super friends. Because that was like, oh, it's her rival, her nemesis. So I'm not sure. I mean, there are a lot of different ones out there, but then we're getting into more like the God realms, and I don't know how much DC wants to try and set up future films. So I'm very curious to see who they would pick as a follow-up villain. Because when I think of Wonder Woman, I really don't think of, like, hey, Artemis, who was another competing Amazon for the title. But, I mean, they've kind of changed that whole perspective and everything. So that kind of meh. Her mother, who, you know, never wanted her to be, you know, out from Themyscira in the first place. I don't know. I mean, she's Wonder Woman so powered, you have to have someone to kind of balance that. And with the exception of, like, Darkseid, or, you know, maybe we can see Granny Goodness with the Femme Fatales and all of that. That would be kind of fun to see that kind of storyline. But from a standpoint of her next villain, or, you know, polar opposite, it really doesn't exist. She doesn't have a Joker to, like, you know, the Batman side. Or, I mean, you know, you got Superman with Zod, of course, or, you know, there's a ton of, you know, Superman villains. I mean, hell, we could even bring in, you know, Brainiac or Metallo, or, you know, and even Doomsday for a whim. But Who does Wonder Woman have? It's a good question. I mean, of course, we still have Aquaman coming. We have Flash coming. We have a there's a whole, you know, barnyard full of films coming from the DC side. How successful they'll be and what they're going to look like remains to be seen as we enter into the new year. But my prediction for Warner Brothers for 2021, they are going to do everything in their power to try and usurp Marvel's hold on the box office. And I think they're going to fail miserably. Good luck. I don't think DC's coming late to this game, guys. Facts are facts. They are just getting here too late. They haven't set the groundwork. I mean, Marvel's 10 years in the making to get just to this point when you think about all of the work and the setup and the meticulous thought in the timelines to put everything into place to establish a history. Which I know sounds strange to say, but I mean that's kind of what you're looking at. So we'll see, but DC's always got great ideas, great characters, but damn, the execution just leaves you wanting. We'll see. It's a whole new year. I'm excited to see what Warner Brothers, what DC brings out, but I'm a little relieved to hear that Green Lantern, no longer the worst movie. But I don't know. Could be wrong. They could be wrong. I may like it. I don't know. Speaking of I don't know, Revenge of the Nerds looks like they're going to get a reboot from Seth MacFarlane, who evidently just is bored and is just looking for new IPs to expand on. I don't really think that Revenge of the Nerds speaks well to this generation because there's no longer, I guess the dichotomy is still there of like, you know, jocks and nerds and all of that, but I don't think that that's the case anymore. When I think of like it, I think everyone just kind of meshes together, but I don't know. I'm so far removed from that kind of thinking anymore because let's face it, nerds and geeks are very well accepted and it's kind of like the norm. You have conventions, you have all this stuff, and if you don't do it, you're kind of frowned upon. The coin is kind of flipped to, you know, no one likes jocks. Sports is kind of like, so you're one of those guys. So I don't think that this film really, you know, hits a node these days. I mean, I think this is just really off, and maybe, I don't know, maybe Seth MacFarlane has a whole new take on it, and it's going to be some kind of filled-up version of, tributes and, you know, Family Guy come to life. I don't know. I mean, this comedy was made in 1984, and there's a couple of scenes in there that do not translate well, especially, like, the whole kind of rapey scene that nobody wants to talk about but is really like and I know that was actually one of the softball questions that was thrown at Seth, and they're kind of approaching it to the aspect of the nerd still falls in love with the girl, still falls in love with the nerd, but because he's tutoring her and sees another side, blah 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 blah, which is fine. I mean, that, you know, update the whole stigma, I guess. I don't know. This just doesn't seem like, I mean, I don't know if I would be interested in it, but I don't know. But I know this is something that, you know, they've been working on. I know this was something that they talked about back in like 2006. So whether or not it actually comes to fruition is unknown. But for the most part, I think is just grasping at straws. They're trying to find stuff to remake yet again that they don't need to. This is perfectly just left where it is. Just leave it alone. It's a period piece. You just kind of sit back and look at it and scratch your head. Same as like Ski School. I mean, that is, there's another film that you really can't remake. Just leave it alone. Let it be. It's a film of the times. It was how movies were built. You know, you had like, you know, the awkward comedy that, you know, 10 minutes, no, let's see, what was it? I think they actually even timed it. It's like basically 30 minutes in, and, you know, there's some nudity, and then, you know, some, it ran a specific formula. That's all I'm saying. I mean, almost like the horror movies of the day. There was a specific formula that they followed, and you can see it, and it just gets repetitive after a while, because all of those films of the day, you know, Ski School, of course, Revenge of the Nerds 2, all of those explicit comedies all had the same kind of formula. And it's fine. I mean, like I said, it's a product of the times, but I don't think it's something that we can revisit. I'm just scratching my head going, McFarlane just really just needs something to focus on. Like, you know, maybe just finishing Orville, or, you know, doing that kind of project. That would be fun. I mean, I know we'll see Orville, supposedly, this coming year. According to what sources have said. And thank God, I actually like the Orville. But here's the problem. When Orville landed, there was no Star Trek. There really was no comparison. So, you know, it filled that niche, that need. It scratched the spot, absolutely. So now we have Star Trek, and it is far and away way better than it ever was, and has stepped forward into the new millennia, the new generation, and it surpassed a lot of expectations. Because when I watched Discovery, and I'll admit it, I was the first one to say, nope, don't like it, not going to like it, this is rubbish, turn this garbage off. But I retract that statement. Discovery is probably one of the most compelling thoughts and one of the original takes off of Star Trek that I have enjoyed immensely. And then you throw Picard in there, which was even better. I'm holy crap, shit. Smack my ass and call me a trucker, because that was just brilliant. All of that. So to see Star Trek step up their game and represent like they did is spectacular, with everything that they're trying to accomplish on the Star Trek side, especially now that we've got even more rumors. Jerry Ryan has also posted up recently that they are in production. They were a little bit delayed for Picard, but everything's moving forward, so I'm happy to see Seven of Nine's back for Picard. And we've got other shows that are coming through for CBS All Access. So Star Trek is back. It's a little different, and it's different in a good way. So that leaves the question of Orville. What happens? What do you do? Do you continue on the same kind of obscure comedic take on a galaxy far, far away? Or do you try and mix it up? Or do you just finish season 3 and say, good game, and send everybody home? It's an interesting question, and I don't know. And this was something that someone asked me. Is there room for both? And it's a valid question, and I don't have an answer. I mean, I don't think there's a direct competition between the two shows when it comes to audience. They're both, you know, reaching probably the same, and maybe even, you know, a little bit of an overlap, just because of everyone that's involved with Orville was or is involved with Star Trek at some point or at some capacity. That said, is there enough? I mean, can there be too much sci-fi? I mean, we kind of went through a drought, no doubt. However, now that we've got all of these, you know, interesting shows and sci-fi is kind of making a push to come back again, I don't know. I don't know if I have it in my schedule or my mind space to lumber through another Star Trek-esque show without the comparison. And that's the killer. When you sit down and you watch the show and you start comparing, you look at them and you're like, ooh, no, that Star Trek did it better. No, Orville did it better. That comparison, whether you like it or not, will be there. So when Hulu decides to put the next season of Orville out there is anyone's guess. Of course, I know everyone is excited to get it out, especially Seth, especially everybody on that set. And it's a great cast. It's a great crew. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the Orville season 2 more than I thought. And in fact, it was like a step up from the first season. It did improve. It didn't slip, which, trust me, it could have happened. But it was a solid show, and I do like the characters. So maybe on that standpoint, we can see what happens. But my prediction for 2021 is that Orville season 3 will be the last season. Just saying. Just not that I want it to happen, but I think it will. I just have a feeling. And also speaking of genre things, and I just kind of laughed because this circled around again for topics, was Bruce Campbell's new movie, Bruce versus Frankenstein, Bruce wants it to be the Expendables of horror. And I know we've talked about this, and this has been a story that has been floating around for at least 2 years. And it hasn't gotten any, no one's even like interested in making this film, which is a shame because I think that this would be spectacular, especially if you get Remy involved and Bruce. Those two just have that golden touch for the comedic side of horror. I think this would actually be very entertaining. It more so than you think, because of course, you know, Bruce wants to bring in Kane Hodder. He also wants to bring in Robert Englund. I mean, we're talking about like the creme de la creme of 80s horror icons. Same thing that Sylvester Stallone did for The Expendables, bringing all of, you know, some faces in that, you know, we didn't think we would ever see. Dolph Lundgren. I never thought we would see Dolph Lundgren in a film again. And of course, dare I say that's probably the reason he's in Aquaman and back in acting again, that everyone's like, oh, we forgot about this guy, you know? So there is the opportunity. There is some fun things that could happen with this. However, nothing, no traction, no studio. And it's sad because I think it would be probably one of the best ideas. And who do you get for Ghostface? I mean, and even just the thought of Wes Craven making, you know, a film with him in it but not doing it, I think would be absolutely classic. So much fun to have with this whole idea, because just, but I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. As much as I would love to, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe someone will sign, especially when you see the last couple of horror films that have come through, like The Dead Don't Stay Dead or whatever that Bill Murray film was, that was just so, The Dead Don't Die, which probably was last year's most obtuse film I have ever witnessed. And I sat through all of it, and, yeah, okay, I guess. I really don't have, at the end of it, I just was left just scratching my head. So I in fact, it followed up with Slither, which is much better of a film considering, you know, how old that film is. And it was instantly redeemed for me. So I was just like, okay, well, that led me into Slither, so I'm fine. Yeah, I know, it's a weird angle. Work with me. So the fact that you have films like that that are still getting greenlit, maybe there's hope for this, but I wouldn't get my fingers crossed on this one, because I don't see this one hitting the light of day. It's a Hail Mary at best. So good luck with that. There is something that looks like it is going to be a good green lit go project that I am so excited about. And I know how Red feels about continuations, reboots, or however you want to approach this. And I know Private Cheeseburger, Double A Ron, would sit there and wonder what the hell we are talking about. But One of the greatest series of all time. Night Court is getting a sequel, a rerun. Let's go at it again at NBC. And John Larroquette, legend, absolutely brilliant actor. And in fact, I loved his character, Dan Fielding, who was the prosecuting attorney for the court, Night Court. Where? It's court. That happens at night. It was one of the most creative, inventive series that NBC probably has ever put together, with Judge Harold T. Stone as the judge, and it was actually Harry Stone, who was probably, he was a stand-up comedian. He did magic. He was absolutely amazing. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, which is sad. And of course, Marky Post, John Larroquette, those three. Of course, Richard Mole was in there, and there was just, it was just so good. Such an amazing comedy. And you know what? It's not available on any of the streaming services, and I don't know who has the rights to it, and why this hasn't been brought back or revived on a rerun is absolutely beyond me. In fact, Bob and June Wheeler, which were like reoccurring people in court. Yes, I know there are those people that constantly come back through court. Was a great couple that was always in trouble. But of course, Bob Wheeler was played by Brett Spiner, which we've put up a couple of times in regards to Moment of Geek, and just it's classic. It goes without saying just how amazing this show was. And I know maybe I'm gushing a little bit too much and has a bit of a soft spot in my heart just because I just love the show so much. But it's amazing that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Melissa Rauch, who, of course, from Big Bang Theory, played Bernadette, is executive producing this whole new storyline for Night Court. It's bringing back Dan Fielding and Harry Stone's daughter as basically filling in or taking over as the circuit judge in New York, same as her father. And that's the premise for the show. I don't know how much of the original cast is going to be making a return in addition to John Larroquette. Because, I mean, this, I don't want to say that this probably gave Larroquette a tremendous amount of fame. I mean, he won a couple of Daytime Emmy Awards. He got a lot of accolades for his role and the part that he played in the series. And he's kind of like the Sam Malone of Cheers, but in court. I mean, he was just, you know, he had his flaws. You were waiting for him to do something redeemable, but all intents and purposes, he was kind of sleazy. He was very sleazy, but it worked so well, especially when he's playing off Marky Post, who was the public defender, and it was. Just magic. So I'm very excited to see what they're going to do. And of course, right now they're saying that Melissa Rauch is not going to be making an appearance in the series. She won't be acting. She's just going to be executive producing and a lot more behind the scenes, which, okay, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm really like on the fence on her as an actress. I don't know what, is she any good outside of Big Bang? Who knows? And maybe she is, but she's making a buttload of cash from Big Bang being in syndication, and you know, let her enjoy this. She's doing something, and I would not be surprised if we don't see her make an appearance or show up, or we see some other people come through the court, you know, as favors to her. I mean, maybe we'll see kind of like, maybe we'll see Bob and June Wheeler come back. That would be great. Or maybe, you know, a reoccurring role for some of her Big Bang alum. I just see a huge potential for just how good this could be. And I know I'm probably gushing a little too much, but Yeah, I'm really, 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 really like it. So, what else is going on with this? Sony, yeah, that's kind of all the information that, is out there for this right now. So we'll see what happens. This is based out of Warner Brothers, of course, just kind of just reading and make sure I didn't miss anything. But yeah, that's kind of it. So, Harry Anderson was the gentleman that played Harry Stone. Who passed away. Great guy. He was, and after Night Court, he just kind of disappeared. He pulled a Carson, just kind of faded into the distance. You saw him very, very rarely, if at all. So, which is kind of sad. And of course, if you want to look into Night Court, it ran from 1984 to 1992, for 9 seasons. This show ran. So it is. I wouldn't say a heavy hitter, but it was, you know, must-see TV for sure. So we'll see what happens on this story, because, oh yeah, I know this isn't the last you're going to hear about it from me. Absolutely not. Now on to the streaming side of life, which streaming just kind of is just hit or miss. I'm curious to see how the streaming services survive in 2021, and what all, because my prediction, I do think we will see movie theaters return. I know Tom Hanks was quoted earlier in the week saying that he believes they will return as well, and we will see a strengthening in the Marvel-esque type of films. So I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I definitely think that they're probably the most genre-filled area when it comes to films that were in the can. So, yes, I'm sure we'll see a ton of comic book films come flooding in just because they're ready to go and everybody's anxious to see them, and other projects have just been kind of shelved. So with the weird thing that's going on with HBO Max and, you know, just buying up films that have been produced and they're going to be, you know, sharing on their platforms while they're in theaters, we'll see how that works out. I'm very, very curious to see what that model looks like. But on the Netflix side, and this came as no surprise to me, but the fact that it took so long for them to finally say, yes, here's the deal. But it looks like Lock and Key has been renewed for 2 seasons, which is absolutely spectacular. So if, because I'm trying to think on the comics, if I think the first, the major story arc with the Lock family was six different stories. I got to think of my collecteds, because I think it was 6 different stories until they had everything basically came to a completion, because there is an end to the story. It isn't ongoing. There are Lock and Key issues that come out that are from Joe and Gabriel, who do Lock and Key, but for the most part it is like one-off stories or self-contained stories. We haven't gone back to the Locke family after everything's resolved at the end of the series. So for them to continue, it's not a surprise, but I'm just surprised it took so long for them to say. I mean, Netflix was quick to basically just say, October Friction, nope, done. So, I mean, I guess there was some kind of doubt on what was going to happen with Locke and Key. I know with, when you're looking at, like, the different shows and everything, Stranger Things definitely, you know, they've said this season is the final season, which we'll see in 2021, which is fine. We'll get a wrap-up with that story. So I think Netflix is really trying to pace themselves on what their next staple series is going to be. So between, you know, like, The Witcher and Lock and Key, I mean, those are 2 great fillers that they can put in there, because I don't think they want to lose any of like the nerd following that they've collected from, Stranger Things. And I think they're still trying to look at something in the same genre. They don't want to mess with what's working. So extending this for 3 seasons, not a surprise. There's plenty of material. They could even go a little off script and do some backtracking to explain more of Key House, which I would kind of be in. I'd be in for that. And with Joe Hill and Rodriguez working on this, I think they're working on this. I would be surprised if Gabriel Rodriguez and Joe Hill are not, like, you know, deeply involved with the representation of this property, because they put a lot of time, they put a lot of energy, and I know they worked closely together to create this whole engrossive world that became the series. So not to have them involved in it would just be kind of short-sighted, I think, on Netflix side, and I don't think that they would do that. So to see maybe a little, you know, kind of a glimpse back into more history with the house, more history with the keys, kind of expand a little bit more where you couldn't do it in the comics, I think would be kind of exciting. I don't mean like go completely off script like Walking Dead or anything along those lines, but there's some definitely great storytelling potential here, and I'm hoping to see it. I know. I love the comic. This was great. If you haven't read Lock and Key, what's wrong with you? It's under IDW's banner as far as the publisher. Easy enough to get the first trade. Actually, all of the trades, I think, are still easily available and are all in print. The hardcover versions may be a little bit more difficult to come across. And I know there's like a huge collected edition. If you want to sit down and just devour this series, you will. It is really compelling. And, yeah, it's tragic. It's tragic. But anyway, moving on to this story. The show. What else? Yeah, I guess that's basically, that was all that the information was. I thought there was more to that story. Sorry. But, you know. 2 more seasons? That's worth it to me. I just want to share news. I want to make you happy. It's the end of the year. You should go out on a high point. I do know that they're talking about, and speaking of Joe Hill properties, that's probably why I brought this up. They are looking at adapting Horns, which is one of Joe Hill's books, into a series. I know they did a film with Daniel Radcliffe, which wasn't bad. It was very interesting. Again, a very tragic kind of end, but I'm realizing that's sort of Joe Hill's style when it comes to writing. I haven't watched any of Nosferatu. I know it's on AMC and everyone raves about it, but and Zachary Quinto does an amazing job. I just haven't watched it. And maybe I will when it goes to streaming or crosses over to something else. I don't know. But again, how many watching hours in the day do I have? That is an excellent question. But and maybe it will be on streaming services soon, because if I'm not mistaken, Nosferatu got canceled this year. So I know that there was an audience. I know people were digging it, but evidently AMC decided to cut and run on that particular show, so it is kaput. It is done. What else? Oh, speaking of kaput and done, so I've dived into his Dark Materials. It's on HBO. We're about to wrap season 2. In the series, and I don't know, and I don't have Red here to tell me much about the books, because I think I skimmed the first book in the series. It is a children's series, and it was something that I don't think I really got into. They are adapting Philip Pullman's classic novels for this series. And of course, Philip only wrote 3 books in the series, so it only makes sense that HBO renewed his Dark Materials for a 3rd and final season. So I have a feeling that they're just going to wrap the whole story up, follow the books. And from my perspective and what my memory serves, that the first season followed the first book relatively close. But I can't tell you about the second season. It's great. I love the worlds that they're building, but at the same point, it's just so slow at times. I mean, I feel that the pace of the show just could be a little quicker. And the kids aren't annoying me yet, which is a surprise. And I don't like Monkey Girl because I just, I don't know what to think of that character. I don't know if I should have sympathy for her, or if I should be angry with her, or just exactly what my motivations for that character should be. But I definitely don't like her. I definitely don't like her at all. So I'm enjoying it, but I don't know if I'm like in love with it. The show itself is beautifully done. The production value has been great. The story is interesting enough that it's kept me glued to seeing it to fruition. I want to see where this is going. I want to see how this story ends. But I would like to see more of the world, to be honest with you. We get kind of like teasers and things through the eyes of the characters, but there's so many questions that are going on about, like, where are all the other worlds? Because, you know, it branches to other dimensions. And I guess there's like an infinite amount of possibilities, sure, but, you know, you get a feeling that there's so much more to it. And I don't know if, you know, Philip Pullman was planning on coming back to do more or not, but it just, I want more. And I mean, I know they're not going to do like Harry Potter or, you know, anything like that. And I can see why this film, because The Golden Compass was interesting when it came out. I didn't see it till much later, but it was kind of one of those, all right, I'll give it a try one night. But I can see why it was difficult to put all of, because if the first season followed the books as close as I think it did, it was a lot of information to disseminate. There's a whole lot that was left on the floor for that film. And putting it in a series makes perfect sense. Of course, when The Golden Compass was made, TV wasn't built the way it is today. So, that said, I don't know. Maybe the pacing is correct, but I just want to see more, and I feel like they're just, I don't want to say missing anything, but I don't know. Overall, though, the characters have been fun. I've enjoyed seeing, you know, this, the progression of the characters, and just, you know, the overall, the story arcs. So, I mean, it's enjoyable. It's fun. I'll see how the season ends. Season 3, I'm sure, will be as big. So, yeah, I'm really on the fence. I guess I don't have an opinion on this story or on this series yet. So I'm on the fence. There you go. There you have that. I am hooked. So CBS, speaking of streaming services, has The Stand. And I watched the first episode, and it is creepy as fuck. It really captures, I think, what the book was trying to relay, and it does it very, very well. And you got some interesting like juxtapositions when they do cut scenes as they're filling in the story. So now, I mean, at the end of the first episode, we've seen where things are. We kind of get like the beginnings and the in-between stuff. So there's some definite weird stuff going on. But it's flowing well so far. And that may change. I don't know. But Skarsgård as Flag is perfect. That is just brilliant casting right there, because Flag in the books is absolutely vile. But charming at the same time. So when I saw Skarsgård, all I can think, of course, is True Blood and him playing Eric, he really has that skill down. So I'm curious. I'm excited to see this series continue. I know not a lot of people have CBS access. I'm sorry. I feel bad. And they're doing this weekly. It's not one big episode dump. So CBS is definitely, you know, keeping to the formula of, you know, every week a new episode. We're not going to give you this so you can binge the shit out of it. And I don't know how many episodes are involved with The Stand. I haven't even checked. And I don't know if they're going to wrap it at the end of this. So I there's so many questions. I don't know. I don't know the answers to this one. But Stephen King fans, I think, would like this. I like this. And I mean, I wouldn't call myself a huge Stephen King fan. I'm an admirer of his work. Of course, Dragon's Eyes is my favorite novel by Stephen King. And if you haven't read that, absolutely worth reading. He wrote it for his daughter. And it's the one book of his that I'm honestly surprised they never did a film or a series or anything on. It's really well thought out, and I really enjoyed it. If you've never read Dragon Eyes, by all means, please pick that up. It's not like his horror stuff. It's nothing like it, and it's rather compelling. So Stephen King fans, I think, would enjoy The Stand right now. It's better than the ABC miniseries already by just the first episode. So I'm already getting, you know, like, you know, the creepy vibes from the characters, like, ooh, I don't like you, and that's the way it's supposed to be. So there are some good qualities to it. It's way better. And then, of course, you can be a little bit darker. It is streaming, and I think this time they got it right. Much better than it, too. So just some side thoughts. Also in streaming news, there's a lot going on the Star Wars side of things, to be honest with you. And I'm not in the least bit surprised. So in the meantime, since I didn't podcast last week, The Mandalorian came to its triumphant season 2 ending. And, oh, you know what? Shut up. I'm not crying. You're crying. That was some tear-jerking, emotional shit right there. Holy crap. I was excited. I had chills. I was in tears. I was at the edge of my seat with anxiety. Like, oh my God. What Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have done when it comes to just building a moment is tremendous. So you're like, oh my God. And I find myself, and this wasn't the first episode that I realized this. I came to this conclusion amongst, you know, many glasses of wine, that it happens a lot during this show, and I don't know how they do it. So, and I'm referring to just like the build up, and you don't know. So, okay, perfect example. They're in the final episode. They're on the bridge. The Dark Troopers are trying to get in. The situation looks bleak. It looks way beyond bleak. You know, something's got to give, but what is it going to be? The same thing with on the ice planet for episode 2 of this season, where they're in the Razor Crest. The monster is going to get them. The situation looks bleak. It's the same damn thing, and every time I fall for it, like, oh my God, he's going to get eaten. Oh my God, what's going to happen? The shock value and the fact that you don't know. I should have seen what happened for the final episode. No spoilers. I should have seen what happened for the final episode as what was going to happen. But you're so engrossed in the moment, you're so captivated by what's happening, that you just don't think about it, I guess, or see it, or you know, you're just so into it, you're not even considering the options. You just want to see, you know, they're going to get out of it, right? But you don't know how. And maybe that's part of the magic. Maybe that's is the excitement, the childhood side that they bring to it, because you're so just pulled into it. You're so attached to these characters, you don't want to see any of them get taken out, but you're expecting it. You're expecting someone to fall. So which one? What happens? Does somebody give up, you know, the sacrifice? You know, we always see Mando, you know, go into the mouth of a particularly large, ugly worm, and he's figuring he's not coming back. So there are those situations where you're expecting, especially like season one, where you don't know, okay, how are they going to get out of it? They're held up in a cantina with basically a platoon of stormtroopers. Granted, their aim isn't that great, but with that much firepower, they still could get a lucky shot in. So, I mean, I get it, but you keep falling for it. Just how they're telling these stories is just mind-blowingly good. Just wow. So, like I said, no spoilers, but just the whole story and the overall arc to Mandalorian is just, it's masterful, and it's nothing short of that. Just how well it is weaved together, and I didn't expect a resolution or a closure, and I know I didn't, because I was predicting that for season three, to what was going on. And to have it happen the way it did was perfect. It absolutely made sense. It worked. And they did what we didn't expect. They gave us what we wanted, and we liked it. Holy shit, there's a concept. Think about that for a second. They gave us what we wanted, and we liked it, because they are fans. They get it. So with this, there's so much popping out of Star Wars. One, of course, is Boba Fett, Book One. Now, the whole thing with the Boba Fett thing, I know everyone has got like up in arms and like, holy shit. So if you haven't watched the credits, no spoilers. Stay till the end of the credits. Another page from Favreau. Man's on a roll here. Put some butter on him. The end of the credits, you get a snippet, and then of course the teaser for Boba Fett Book One, which they left out of the Disney presentation for the stockholders, which makes perfect sense why they did that, because they didn't want to spoil anything for the fans. They didn't want to ruin it. And again, it's so meticulous, so well guarded, so Marvel, so Favreau. Just him and Dave Filoni, just give him the keys. Here, we'll be back next week. We'll be back next year. Tell us how things go. That's what needs to happen. So they didn't spoil it during the announcement, but we're getting the Book of Boba Fett. Now, according to sources and everything that's going on, it will be an independent series from Mandalorian. So the treat, if you will, that we're looking forward to next year is that we will have both Boba Fett and Mandalorian Season 3 happening relatively close to each other, if not at the same time. So that is wonderful. That is perfect. I can't imagine a better holiday season next year, or a winter season. I know, I just like you, I want it to be 2021 at the end already too, because that it. I don't know if I can wait. I'm so hooked on this series that it is. They even have behind the scenes, like they did last year for Mandalorian season one. They did it again for season two for behind the scenes. And if you haven't started watching that, by all means, please do. There's some great information and stories, and just you. When you see these guys talk about Star Wars, it is like those guys in the comic shop that go on about it. And the arguments that I've seen at cons, these guys have that same fire and passion about the project and what they're doing and the love of the franchise. So, spot on. So spot on. I love it. But, that said, Boba Fett, Mandalorian, same time. Relatively close. What the story is going to be, anyone's guess. But in the meantime, and I've talked about this already, the new cartoon series that'll be starting, The Bad Batch, which, so in the timeline, this basically, Revenge of the Sith, and then goes into Bad Batch. So the Bad Batch are running parallel with everything else following the fall of the Jedi. They didn't have the chips, so they're on the right side of this. They're not under control of the Empire. So to see the story from their perspective is going to be unique, and I think this is maybe will fill in a few more holes. In addition to Fennec Shand, who is Min Wayne's character in Boba Fett, is also going to be voicing the same character in The Bad Batch. So we get a little bit more on her character, which I think is great. And I love how they'll do these, you know, kind of like throwbacks to give us a little bit more information. So, I mean, because there's an influx of so many characters and a lot going on. So to get this kind of like backtreading but still maintaining the storylines that that are going on, that are established, especially when you look at how Clone Wars ended, and just you're kind of left with this aww type of feeling. They took my puppy. This is going to be great. Now, as far as when we will see a debut of The Bad Batch, in addition to how many episodes has yet to be released, but Filoni has stated that this is we're going to get more detailed on Fennec. It's a younger character, even though it's still voiced by Min Wayne, which is awesome. And there are, you know, other elements that we'll probably see with the clones from The Bad Batch, in addition to them running up against the clones. So we may see, you know, obviously they don't make it out. This is like Rogue One. they don't make it out. So how their story ends is so good. Such a great idea. I love this. So yeah, I like it. Can't wait. And speaking of other shows, and this is almost like on the other side of the coin, because I'm not hating. Let me just put this out there right away. I'm not hating on the show, all right? But I am hating on what's happened to the show. And I'm referring to Doctor Who. We've got the New Year's Day special that's coming up on New Year's Day that is quickly approaching. Of course, everyone is wondering when we will see the next season with Jodie Whittaker reprising as the Doctor. And rightfully so, Jodie Whittaker has been a very compelling Doctor. However, the sabotage that Chris Chibnall has done to Doctor Who is almost unforgivable. This is a kid that declared, I mean, literally a kid, when he declared he was like Doctor Who's number one fan. He was on a talk show, and they've probably even shown it a few times in regards to him taking over Doctor Who and him bashing on the direction that Doctor Who had went on during the time. I'm sure if you YouTube searched Chris Chibnall's rant on Doctor Who, you probably will find it. And he looks like a snotty little kid. He really, I hate to say that about children sometimes, but when I look at him, I'm like, oh, you're a snotty little child, aren't you? But what Chibnall is doing to Doctor Who is absolutely sabotage. The stories are just, they're not good. There has been like one or two, and they're probably not even his, that I've enjoyed for the last two seasons that I really am just like, eh. I mean, if you want to, Chris, if you want to see what like good, just independent, like standing stories that are compelling, go look at the final season of Peter Capaldi. That would teach you tons. And I know I don't want to be hostile and angry about the whole thought, but I'm just looking at what he has done. And I'm not the only one. Ratings for this show have not only declined, but sank like the Titanic. This was BBC's like heavyweight show, and
the champ has fallen. And there are questions, there are doubts that we will see anything after this. So congratulations, Chris. You have completely shot Doctor Who in the ass. Congratulations. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm missing something. But just overall, my experience with the show has not been positive. And it has nothing to do about who's playing the Doctor. In fact, I find Jodie Whittaker a very compelling Doctor. I do. I mean, I've already voiced my opinions on the companions and the value of each one. But as a Doctor, Jodie Whittaker has not been bad. She has been decent. But of course, again, dealing with what you're given as far as a plot, as far as a script, it really limits what we can see as far as Jodie Whittaker's range as being the Doctor. There really hasn't been a great moment for her to shine. There hasn't been a Dare to Be Great moment for her. And it's almost criminal. It's disappointing is what it is. So maybe we will see a decent chance with the New Year's Day special. I mean, because I even think about like the profound moving speeches that you get from the Doctor that are inspiring, that are uplifting, that speak to the heart and the whole of humanity, the underlining meaning behind Doctor Who, and it's not there. I mean, even the speech Capaldi gives when they're back in time with the fish in the ice and his statement as far as the value of a species, there hasn't even been a moment like that for Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. And maybe I'm off base. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed it. Just because I was distracted by the brightening up of the script or the force feeding of just minutia ideas. It's just so much to disseminate from the train wreck that has become the show. And I'm sorry to say that. I really am, because I love Doctor Who. Huge fan. Giant. Huge fan. And maybe we'll see a turn. Maybe we will. I mean, I won't even dive into the Timeless Child. that whole story. But New Year's Day, the return of Jack Harkness. That's what I'm looking forward to. I want to see how we get there. And I'm excited. I'm excited for it. Maybe this will redeem. Maybe it'll redeem it. Maybe it'll just bring it all around. Maybe. And as soon as filming is finished, we will see the next season of Doctor Who. So it's in the works. It's just, of course, the Rona world we live in right now at the moment. So as soon as they are done, we are going to see it. And my prediction is that is true. But my prediction also is this is the final go for Doctor Who. For a while, anyway. Anyway, my thoughts. What else? Oh, video games. Woo! Speaking of the new year, Animal Crossing's New Horizons, a complete New Year's Eve 2020 little guide going on. These guys are on point. New Horizons is ending 2020 in style, starting at 5 a.m. on December 31st. Resident service shops will close so Isabel and Tom Nook can set up a countdown event in the plaza, which includes a massive clock, prizes, gifts, and more. So it looks like starting on December 27th, which was a few days ago, you were able to go in and purchase specific things. The account bulletin or countdown bulletin went out for everybody, and this looks like it will be kind of fun. There are a bunch of different things, I guess, that you're able to pick up from shops. New Year's Eve items. Sorry, I was just reading this. New Year's Eve noodles. And a 12 grape dish. I guess there's like a bunch of stuff. Holy crap. On New Year's Eve, players can acquire a light stick and a New Year's hat or New Year's silk hat from Isabel or Tom, respectively. The light stick only comes in yellow. But the festive hats each come in 8 colors: blue, green, light blue, orange, pink, purple, red, and yellow. Nook will only have 1 type of hat in 4 available colors on any given island. So you probably are going to want to reach out to your friends and coordinate what hat, trade, whatever. I'm not sure how that works. So I'm not the most skilled Animal Crossing players out there. I've dabbled, but I got too many other games going on. Let's see, what else is going on with this? There will be a bunch of shopping to celebrate the transition from 2021. A lot of cultural ties, evidently. So they're going to have things from different cultures that are available. And there's a decent list out there. And I know if you go to Nintendo, they have a list of this. The one I'm kind of curious about is the Zodiac Ox figurine, which brings good fortune, of course, for the Year of the Ox, which I am, actually. I am the Year of the Ox. So I'm a little curious about that. There's also, like, something for Russian New Year that they're celebrating in this, Amiramochi, which is something that is broken open and eaten on January 11th to share the spirit within for good health. So, yeah, it's some kind of cool stuff. Yeah, so if you're not doing your Animal Crossing, why aren't you? Get out there. Get going, because New Year's is right around the corner, and I'm sure you got to do a lot of, like, probably some decent hunting to get all of everything that's available in the shops, because they will be closing the shops, so it's a matter of timing, especially when New Year's hits. All right, well, I guess that kind of brings us into the twilight of 2020's podcast, the last one from Weekend Geek Update for the year. To wrap it up, I don't know what your festivity plans look like. I know, to be honest, I'm not sure what mine are. There are options out there. Of course, I know everyone has their traditions of if you start a certain movie, Ghostbusters 2, at a certain time at midnight, for you it will be midnight and everyone's singing, to all anxine. So there are different fun little things out there. I'm not sure what, if anything, is going on from a party standpoint, but be responsible. Be safe. Be safe for you. That's my message. Be safe for you. Be considerate, but be safe for yourself. Whatever brings you comfort, whatever brings you joy, focus in on those things. We don't know what 2021 is going to look like. It may have some stark similarities to 2020, but it can only get better from here. I think I just quoted MASH. So with that in mind, we do have a lot of new things coming for the year. Be sure to look for our post on Thursday for the meat and potatoes review of Wonder Woman. No spoilers, of course, but we do have a review coming for you on New Year's Eve for that particular film. In addition to next year, we have a whole new format, whole new ideas, some new interviews, because we're going back out to the world. We've got a couple interviews set up with people already who are anxious to talk about what they've been doing while they've been sheltering in place. So there's a lot going on for 2021 for us, and maybe the potential return of cons, which would be nice. Of course, I don't think those cons are going to be available to us until maybe the fall of the year. Spring's right out. Summer's dodgy. So I'm thinking fall, but at least some con is better than no con, in my opinion. Just a chance to get out, stretch our legs, and it's like coming out from a long winter's nap. In the meantime, I appreciate you guys being with us for our fifth year. Yeah, fifth year. And continue to like us, continue to share us. We are on all the platforms that you can possibly imagine for podcasts. Also, we do have a YouTube channel now that is completed, and we'll have materials added to it as well. So lots of fun stuff coming. Again, like us, share us. We appreciate you. In the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.